गणानां त्वा गणपतिं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमम् कन्याकुमारी धीमहि तन्नो दुर्गः प्रचोदयात्। सो नौ वी रीस्टार्टेड दिस तत्त्वबोध नॉट टू सिंपली स्टडी, नॉट टू मेमोराइज द टेक्स्ट एंड टू अ थरो अंडरस्टैंडिंग ऑफ द कंटेंट्स ऑफ तत्त्वबोध that every one of you must be able to teach the basics of Vedanta to other people. Because we already done this text here, now I started, restarted for the beginners, so others also can join the classes so that you can get trained to be able to teach also others. Let us read the first verse. In the whole text, the benediction alone is given in the form of a verse. Otherwise, it is a Vedantic manual in prose form.
Vasudevendra Yogendram नत्वा ज्ञानप्रदं गुरुं मुमुक्षूणां हितार्थाय तत्त्वबोधोभिधीयते।
इवन इन दिस वेरी ओपनिंग वर्स द पर्पस ऑफ स्टडीइंग द बुक इज वेरी क्लियरली स्टेटेड तत्त्वबोधः अभिधीयते। So this book of self-knowledge or knowledge of the truth, book on self-knowledge, knowledge of the truth is presented here for the welfare, for the good of mumukshavaha, for helping the mumukshus. It means this book is meant for those who are mumukshus. And we all know very well the word mumukshuhu is a desiderative word. I explained many times in the class. Mokshaha means freedom. And desire for freedom is mumuksha. And the one who has desire for freedom is mumukshuhu. And mumukshunam hitarthaya, for the good of mumukshus, those who are desirous of accomplishing moksha, this textbook is presented. Why? Because this textbook, book is also called Tattvabodha, because it's a pramanam. The book is called Tattvabodha, knowledge of the truth, because this book serves as a means of knowledge, as a pramanam. Whereas, tattva bodha, knowledge of the truth, which is otherwise called knowledge of the self, is also called prama. Prama means knowledge. Prama is knowledge. Pramanam is instrument of knowledge. Prama, pramanam. The word tattvabodha has two meanings now. Tattvabodha also means prama. Tattvabodha also means what? Pramanam. How can we say that? The word tattvabodha, knowledge of the truth, always knowledge rises only in the mind. And mind is internal, isn't it? Mind is inside, internal, instrument of knowledge, antahkaranam, and the knowledge takes place in the mind, in the form of a thought. Therefore, knowledge is internal. Knowledge of the thought which takes place in the mind, knowledge of the truth in terms of one's own nature, as one's own swarupam, is tattvabodha, which is the name of a thought which is internal. So it is knowledge. So prama. So tattvabodha means prama. And tattvabodha, the text also is called tattvabodha, because this textbook, which is expressed in words outside, also called tattvabodha, because it serves as a means of knowledge of the truth. Pramanam. So primary meaning of the word tattvabodha is prama, knowledge which takes place in the mind, the form of a thought. And the secondary meaning of the word tattvabodha is what? Pramanam, the means of knowledge. Is it clear now? Okay. And anyway, this tattvabodha here presented, but here tattvabodha abhidiyate means what? This book as a pramanam is presented here for the welfare of, for the good of mukshus. And for which the author seeks the grace of Bhagavan in the form of his own teacher. And I said, tattvabodha presents only 5 important topics. If you want to know what are the contents of this text tattvabodha, very easy to remember. First topic discussed in this text is 4-fold qualifications. 4 qualifications definitely needed, required for the accomplishment of knowledge, you know, forms the first topic. And the second topic is Jiva Swarupa Vicharaha. So, Chatwari Sadhanani or Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampattihi is the first topic. So, we'll thoroughly understand the 4-fold qualifications, 4 qualifications required for the knowledge. Then second important topic discussed is Jiva Swarupa Vicharaha or Vyashti Swarupa Vicharaha. Vyashtihi means individual. Vyashti Swarupa Vicharaha or Jiva Swarupa Vicharaha. So Vicharaha is a noun which means enquiry or analysis. So, enquiry into the nature of the individual or enquiry into the nature of one's own self. So, individual analysis is actually analysis of the nature of one's own self. You can say, Vyashti Swarupa Vicharaha, Jiva Swarupa Vicharaha, or you can say Atma Swarupa Vicharaha, or Swa-Swarupa Vicharaha. Swa-Swarupa Vicharaha. Enquiry into the nature of one's own self. This individual analysis is the first topic. Then this analysis naturally results in the knowledge of the essential nature of individual. What individual being, every individual being is essentially. By understanding what I am essentially, what I am, we understand what every individual is essentially. The second and third topic discussed is Samashti Vicharaha, Samashti Swarupa Vicharaha, or Ishvara Swarupa Vicharaha. Samashti means total. So enquiry into the essential nature of the total, or enquiry into the nature of the Lord, or analysis of the total universe, analysis of the Ishvara. It's called Samashti Vicharaha or Samashti Swarupa Vicharaha or Ishvara Swarupa Vicharaha. We can also say, you know, Samashti means the total. It's third topic. Then the fourth topic is knowledge of the oneness of the essential nature of the individual and the total. It's complete, isn't it? See, it's impossible for us to clearly arrive at the fact of, arrive at the oneness of the truth of the individual and the total without having analyzed individual and the total separately. So after analyzing the individual and the total thoroughly, and we arrive at the clear understanding of the oneness of the truth of the individual and the total. This is in Sanskritam called Vyashti Samashti Swarupa Aikya Jnanam. Vyashti Samashti Swarupa Aikya Jnanam. Or Jiva Ishvara Swarupa Aikya Jnanam. Jiveshvara Swarupa Aikya Jnanam is the fourth topic. Now, fifth topic, you can make out yourself. Aikya Jnana Phalam or Prayojanam. The benefit of the knowledge of the oneness of the truth. If there is no benefit at all, why should we waste our time breaking our head? You know, what is the use of knowing the oneness of the truth? It must serve some purpose. So benefit of the knowledge of the truth, knowledge of the oneness of the truth. So, Jiva Ishvara Swarupa Aikya Jnana Phalam. Or you can simply say Jnana Phalam, the benefit of knowledge of the truth. The truth is one, isn't it? So, you arrive at the oneness of the truth after analyzing both individual and the total separately. This is the fifth topic is this. So, what are the contents of the Tattva Bodhaha, if you understand? Only these are the five topics. And here, this Tattva Bodha teacher now begins introducing these fourfold qualifications. In fact, even though he introduces in the very beginning, as we proceed further, it becomes much clearer for us. So we have seen first qualification, Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha. We are still in the very beginning. Then we have seen the second qualification, Vairagyam, Dispassion. And we have also analyzed the third qualification, Shamadhi Shatka Sampatti, in sixfold disciplines. I think I stopped there. So of those, now finally, we also saw Mumukshutvam. After Samadhanam, we also read the word Mumukshutvam Kim. Page number 89. Mumukshutvam Kim. What I have to do today. Let me remind you, Nitya Anitya Vastu Vivekaha means discriminative understanding of what is real, what is not real. It means what is permanent, what is not permanent. What is timeless and what is time bound is very important. And how do we arrive at this? How can we understand what is permanent, what is not permanent? We are, you know, based on our experience, we understand everything in this world is subject to time. Everything. There's nothing which is not subject to time in this world. So everything has beginning, everything has an end, In between beginning and end also everything is subject to change continuously, constantly, naturally. Therefore, there's nothing which is timeless in this world. And here, we include the very time factor itself. The time factor itself is what? Subject to time. Which means there is a time, the time does not exist. There is a time, this inexplicably vast space also is not there. Which means time has time limitation, space has time limitation, and all the forms, names and functions which exist within the realm of time and space all have time limitation. There's in fact the entire objective universe, including one's body, mind, sense complex, is subject to time. This must be very, very clear. The entire objective universe, including one's body, mind, sense complex, is subject to time. Time bound in nature. Why it is time bound? That is its nature. It's a swabhava. Okay, that's the nature. Now, therefore, nothing which is in the objective universe can be a means of attaining timeless happiness. This next understanding should come. Why should I understand what is time bound? Because I am very clear what I want in my life. I have purushartha nischayaha. Now, if there is no purushartha nischayaha, you will not be interested at all in studying Tattvabodha text, isn't it? Already you must have purushartha nischayaha. Already, that is why I do the introductory 18 talks are important. You must be convinced doubtlessly of the fact that moksha is my ultimate choiceless end. Moksha is ultimate choiceless common human goal. It must be, is a fact, it must be clear, one must be convinced of this fact. Only then, if moksha becomes your ultimate goal, only then you can call yourself a mumukshu. Only then study of the scripture also makes sense. Isn't it? There's a purpose is very clear, then you study. So here, as a mumukshu, already a person who reads this text is what? A mumukshu, which means for him moksha is the ultimate goal. And moksha is, even though the word moksha means freedom, the implied meaning of the word moksha is happiness, fullness, absolute peace of mind. And that naturally, the person who is the seeker of moksha does not want a moksha which is time-bound. The moksha which is sought is timeless, everlasting happiness. Everlasting means it cannot have beginning. It cannot have an end. If moksha I am going to attain is something new which is going to come, it is as a beginning, then that moksha will get lost soon. It will not last long. I am interested in the permanent moksha. If what I am going to accomplish has to be permanent, it cannot have a beginning also. If it cannot have a beginning, it must be already there. Why? The rule is, anything which has a beginning will definitely have an end. Therefore, the moksha I am seeking and the happiness I am searching for is actually a beginningless, endless, everlasting, timeless one. So, the timeless end cannot be accomplished by or through time-bound means. Therefore, the entire objective universe includes action. Please remember, includes all forms of activities, mental activity, oral activity, physical activity. And not only activities, even the results of actions. So, no result of action, whatever action a person does, no result of action can ever be a means of accomplishing moksha. Which means action cannot produce a result which moksha. So action cannot give me moksha, result of action cannot give me moksha, and even the forms, names and functions cannot give me moksha. Nothing which is part of the objective universe can give me moksha, because everything is time bound. Actions are time bound, and even the accessories used for performing actions are time bound. The results of actions are also time bound. The time bound thing cannot give me a timeless moksha. Okay, this is the understanding a person must have. It must be convinced. This is a fact. Everything what is being said is a fact here, and one must have. One must be convinced of this fact. Understand the fact. Convinced of the fact. Then what is the time? The timeless factor alone can give me timeless moksha, which means. And when you're exposed to Shastram, see, everything is subject to time. You can understand based on your experience. But what is timeless? We understand with the help of Shastram, the timeless is the reality, the absolute reality, the one and the only absolute reality of this entire cosmos alone is subject to, is not bound by time. Reality alone is timeless, because reality has no beginning, reality has no end, reality is not subject to time, and reality alone is timeless. Nitya vastu ekam brahma, and that, therefore that reality being timeless in nature is implied by the term brahma, and that alone is timeless. And here the student understands now, with the help of the Shastram, he understands Brahman is timeless because Shraddha in Shastram, and with his own experience he knows everything here is time bound. Now he has his what? Nitya anitya vastu vivekaha. Thereby, now he thinks, if Brahman is the timeless reality, this Brahman timeless reality alone can be a source of timeless happiness, or can be a means of accomplishing the timeless happiness, everlasting freedom. And, okay, nitya vastu will not give me, anitya vastu cannot be a means of accomplishing the timeless result. This viveka the person has. As a result of which, he will know this understanding of the fact. This understanding of the fact alone will help a person discover dispassion, which is called Iha Amutra Arthapalabhoga Viragaha. What's next qualification? Iha amutra artha phalabhoga viragaha. So dispassion towards the results of actions enjoyable here in this world, or enjoyable late, you know, life after in heaven. Because Shastram talks about the heavenly pleasures also. Heavenly pleasures also are accomplishable as a result of karma, actions. And pleasures enjoyable in this world also, you know, are accomplishable as a result of actions. For karma phala, iha amutra artha phala means karma phala bhoga viragaha. So then naturally, a person discovers dispassion towards the enjoyment of all forms of pleasures, enjoyable here and hereafter, earned as a result of actions. Why? How? So dispassion means disinterest. The person goes out of desire for all these enjoyment of pleasures, not because the person hates these pleasures, not because the person is frustrated, he hates them. That's not true. The person neither have liking nor does he have disliking towards this pleasure, enjoyment of pleasures. Why? Because he's naturally grown out of desire for them. Growing out of desire is actually his expression of not having liking or disliking. Okay. So, very important to understand, if anyone has any dislike towards any enjoyment of pleasure, anything, dislike also is bondage. Dislike also is passion. You know, dislike also is attachment. Like also is attachment. You know why? What's attachment again? If I think a given object, a given pleasure, or given person, given behavior is responsible for my unhappiness, then I hate it. That hate also is what? attachment. And if I think a given thing, a given person, a given object, a given pleasure will make me happy, then I'm dependent on that. It is also attachment, liking. So like or dislike, both are actual expressions of attachment, passion only. Like also is an expression of passion. Dislike also is expression of passion only, attachment only. So the person who, the mature person, who has, you know, mature means the one who has understanding of the fact, you know, that understanding of the limitations of everything in the world, that nothing in the world can give me what I am seeking, the timeless. The time bound cannot give me timeless. Timeless cannot be a means of accomplishing the timeless. Time bound cannot be a means of accomplishing the timeless. It is the understanding of this fact helps a person naturally grow out of desire for everything. That is why dispassion is actually expression of maturity. Isn't it? It's an expression of maturity. Maturity is actually expression of understanding of the fact and acceptance of the fact. So what is maturity? Understanding of the fact and acceptance of the fact is expression of maturity. And dispassion is expression of one's understanding of the fact and the maturity, isn't it? Which is having grown out of natural desire for enjoyment of everything. There's neither like nor dislike. This person is completely neutral towards all of them. Why? Because his passion now is for something which can give what he wants. Naturally, you discover passion for knowledge of the reality. Why? Because it is the knowledge of the reality alone can give me what I seek. It is very natural. Understanding of the fact that knowledge of the reality, the timeless reality alone can give me timeless happiness, can help, can serve as a means of accomplishing the timeless. Again, understanding of the fact helps one discover passion for knowledge. And discovering the passion for knowledge is actually discovering this passion towards everything time-bound, which is called vairagyam. Iha amutra artha phalabhoga viragaha. So without viveka, vairagyam is impossible. Without discriminative understanding, dispassion is impossible. Without maturity, without understanding, without maturity, dispassion is impossible. That's why he, in his order, vairagyam, viveka is presented as the first qualification. Why viveka is presented as first qualification? Because that is important, without which vairagyam is impossible. If we have vairagyam alone, vairagyam is very important. Unless you have naturally grown out of desire for all time-bound pleasures enjoyable here and hereafter, which are accomplished as a result of actions, it is impossible for one to make efforts to be disciplined. Therefore, disciplines are presented here as the third qualification. Why? What is? Which qualification is given first? Okay, and here, what are the qualifications? Disciplines. The discipline are not just one discipline. There are six disciplines. And all those six disciplines also said to be what? Wealth, great wealth. Therefore, shamadi shatka sampattihi. There we saw shamaha, damaha, uparamaha, titiksha, shaddha, samadhanam. And the first, again, discipline is shamaha. So, your mental discipline is shamaha, otherwise called shantihi. And so, I tell you, here in this book, the disciplines are enumerated. But how to become mentally disciplined, how to become sensorily disciplined, that means of, you know, the method of becoming disciplined is repeatedly presented in, discussed in Bhagavad Gita. That is why Bhagavad Gita has been chosen as a Smriti Pramana Grantaha, because it is Bhagavad Gita where repeatedly living a life of Karma Yoga is emphasized. Why I should live a life of Karma Yoga? One person has to live life karma yoga in order to have these disciplines. Only by strictly living that, following that way of life, enjoined by the shastram, one can have shamaha. Now, the certain degree of mastery over one's ways of thinking, thoughts, emotions, isn't it, is mental discipline. And also, certain mastery over one's sense organs in using them. We are going to see the elaborately again those disciplines, then sensory discipline. Then, to have mental discipline, even to have sensory discipline, shamaha or damaha, and there is a strictly, one has to use one's will. Unless you use your will, it is impossible for us to be righteous, to follow values. If all my actions had to be in conformity with dharma, had to be conformity with values, I must make use of my will, which means I must know the value of values, isn't it? So knowing the value of values, using one's will, living one's life in conformity with dharma alone will, due course of time, help one have mastery over one's ways of thinking, one's thoughts, one's emotions. That is why shamaha, you have to use your will, to have a strong will, to use your will and to have mastery over the sense organs and mind. Really, you may make efforts only when you have grown out of desire for disciplines. You are still, you are chased by uncontrollable desire for enjoyment of pleasures, and your will be very weak. Understand why the third qualification is presented as third qualification? See, all of us have all this. Nothing is, all of us are definitely blessed with the willpower, but how strong is my will that I can choose to do the right and refrain from the wrong? I can go by dharma. I need a very strong will, and for a person to entertain a stronger will and to use it, thereby not to go against dharma, to have shamaha and damaha, one must have naturally grown out of desire for enjoyment of pleasures. So dispassion is very important for a person to exercise his will and to have a stronger will. Thereby, to have mastery over, one must definitely have stronger will, exercise one's willpower, so that one can have mastery. If you do not exercise your will, what happens? You will not have mastery, you will be a slave of your, isn't it? A slave of your mind. Thoughts, emotions. It's easy to be a slave. Our thoughts are so powerful. Pramathi Balavadram, Arjuna says, easily we can be enslaved by thoughts, our emotions. But to have mastery over thoughts, I must exercise my will strictly, and for which vairagyam is important. Look at this, how one qualification becomes complementary for the other qualification. So, shamaha, dhammaha, then uparamaha. Then you using your will to refrain from the wrong, to do the right, means you have mastered over sense organs, and also mind, and you know how much to use your sense organs and where they should be involved, engaged, etc. What to perceive, what to not to perceive, how to, etc. You know. Then also you'll be more focused in your duties, because you want to be perfect. You try to be as perfect as possible in your duties. You want to be focused. And even being dutiful, focusing on attention only in one's own duties, let the whole world do whatever it is, not to be distracted by what is outside, to be focused in one's own duties also, isn't it? So thereby to be more productive and contributive and constructive in one's activities also. Uparatihi. The Shamadama helps. So uparatihi. Then uparatihi, and because of this attitude towards everything in life as Bhagavan's prasada, ordained by Bhagavan of natural laws, helps one endure all situations with sameness of mind, with samatta buddhi, is called titiksha. Your prasada buddhi helps one have titiksha. Otherwise you cannot endure things, you will go mad. Endurance with sameness of mind, without elation, dejection, that is possible with the understanding of Ishvara being the law, natural law determining the results of actions. So titiksha, then I tell you, unflinching, doubtless faith in the teaching of the Veda Shastram. Veda is the mata, mother, and definitely, just as my physical mother, you know, always thinks of my well-being, and more than a physical mother, beyond her, she can't think beyond limitations, isn't it? But Veda Mata thinks of my emotional, absolute emotional well-being. That is why Veda has given the mother status, Shruti Mata, and therefore the teachings of Shruti and the teacher, isn't it? Shruti Vedanta, Guru Vedanta Vakyesho Shraddha. The unflinching faith must be there. If I doubt Shastram, if I do not have Shraddha in Shastram, nothing can help. Okay, nothing can help. Because now where is the help otherwise? Now go with all your doubts and problems and solutions. Seek. Where is the solution? If at all there is anyone, we can try. Okay? Shraddha. Then Samadhana means being focused. Being focused means not losing sight of one's ultimate goal or purpose of living this life, being accomplishment of moksha in terms of knowledge of the self. Atma jnanameva param laksh, paramam lakshyam. Self knowledge of the truth or discovery of Bhagavan is the ultimate goal, because that goal itself is what? The freedom which it is my ultimate choiceless end. Knowledge of the truth and moksha are identical. That is my ultimate end. And I am living this life ultimately for all these things, all accomplishing this end. This not losing sight of one's end being moksha and jnana, thereby doing everything one does in conformity with dharma, with the focus on moksha, is what samadhanam. Never forget it. We may be doing hundreds of things, so many things, but we never forget what am I living this life for. Isn't it? She'll help me. That's called samadhanam. So these are the sixfold disciplines presented as the third qualification, which is very appropriate to be the third after Vivaika and Vairagya, is third qualification. Above all, he says, even Viveka is possible only if you have desire for moksha. Isn't it? You know, mumukshutvam means what? Moksha, desire. Mumukshutvam, having the desire for moksha, is called mumukshutvam. Not simply having desire for moksha, like having desire for a piece of toast. No, it is what? Burning urge for moksha. I want moksha. You know, I want moksha. Why? Because moksha is my choiceless end. I must accomplish moksha. I can't afford to miss it. That burning urge for moksha. Why I must accomplish it? Because it's my choiceless end. I have no way. I had to accomplish this, isn't it? That burning urge for moksha is what? Having desire for moksha is mukshutvam, which must have been present as the first qualification here. Isn't it? Because it is this desire for moksha. To have desire for moksha, one must have understood what moksha is all about. That is why before starting Tattva Bodha, it is very important to understand the contents of the introductory talks. Pujya Swamiji, I am sure, definitely always gives many talks before he enters into the Tattva Bodha also. One must be convinced that moksha is ultimate goal. And moksha is a choiceless end goal. It has to be accomplished. No choice here. And it is the absolute choiceless. It's not for one person. It is a common human ultimate choiceless goal. And therefore, unless and until I discover this moksha, there's no way of my sorting out my problems. Whatever problems I sort out in life, we do have problems. We do try to sort out prudently, intelligently, using our will, using our intellectual, crushing our intellect, we do sort out. But all those problems are relative, and then actually speaking, relative problems are sorted out. Again, relatively, the absolute end, my fundamental problem will continue to be there, untouched. Because all our relative problems can be just resolved. The whole, all problems in the world, relative problems can be resolved effortlessly if the fundamental root cause problem is sorted out. And the fundamental problem is centered on I, and it is caused by ignorance. For ignorance caused problem has to be sorted out by only ignorance alone. In fact, in the wake of the knowledge, discovering the fact, the problemlessness is the problem. Okay? There's no problem at all. Isn't it? That the psychology has no solution, Vedanta doesn't see one. Isn't it? That is the fact. So here, what I'm saying, this is the thing. So mukshutvam is the qualification. And these four qualifications have been analyzed, discussed now, and Swamiji's own unfoldment of these verses, and I want all of you to read this book. Okay? Now we are entering into, okay, the last one, mukshutvam. So I have summarized what we have seen until now. Mumukshutvam kim, page number 89. Mumukshutvam kim. I already said moksha, you have to remember all this. Let me tell you, because now you are Sanskrit students also. The word as first root, understand the root, much dhatuhu, much. What root? Much is the root. Swamiji must have given here, but anyway, let me tell you what I need to tell you. Much is the root. And from there, you get this mochate, mochayati. You get these verbs. And the noun is what? Mokshaha, masculine noun. Muktihi, feminine noun. Mochanam, neuter noun. All the words mean the same. Freedom, liberation. And what it implies is happiness. Because freedom is sought from the unwanted. Unwanted is sorrow. Therefore, moksha, literal meaning of the word moksha is freedom. The implied meaning of the word moksha is happiness. How do you say implied meaning of the word moksha is happiness? Because freedom is sought by every human being. And the freedom is sought from what? The freedom is sought from the unwanted, undesirable. And what is undesirable, unwanted for any human being, any creature? Unhappiness, sorrow. So, if we are seeking freedom from unwanted, undesirable limitations and sorrow, unhappiness, naturally, what is sought is happiness. Therefore, implied meaning of the word moksha is happiness. So, freedom is equal to happiness. What is happiness again? Happiness is not a state of mind. Why? A state of mind means comes and goes. Any state of mind comes and goes. Happiness is not experience, because which comes and goes. And happiness is not happiness is not a mental condition which comes and goes. It's not even experience. We are not interested in experiencing happiness. Anything experienced is subject to time. So happiness is not an experience here. And what is happiness? Happiness is being happy always, being happy everywhere, being happy with everybody is happiness. Is what is happiness? Which means happiness has no beginning, no end. So that is why no change also. So happiness must be beginningless and endless and changeless, which means happiness is a synonym of the word fullness, or we can say limitlessness. How do we say? Because being limited is being unhappy. For limitation is what? Unhappiness. Being limited is being unhappy. Therefore, mathematics, okay? Being limitless is being happy. Being limited is equal to being bound. Being bound is being unhappy. Therefore, being limitless is being free. Being free is being happy. Therefore, limitlessness is freedom. Freedom is equal to happiness. Got it? See, no other teacher taught like Dayananda Saraswati. Satyam. I never heard. It's a very kindergarten basics. These all people enter into Vedanta and they don't see the connections. But these are the very, very basic lessons we need to understand. How can you say a limitlessness is a synonym of the word happiness? You cannot find in English, even thesaurus cannot show how it is. Isn't it? How can we say limitlessness is equal to happiness? How can we say limitlessness is equal to freedom? Isn't it? Had to come from here. Being unhappy, being limited, being bound is being unhappy. Therefore, being limitless is being free. Being free is being happy. And now make it known. Being limitless is equal to limitlessness. Being free, freedom. And being happy, happiness. Understand? Therefore, and happiness is not a state of mind, is not experience. Because we are not interested in experience which comes and goes. Because every experience or any experience is time-bound in nature. Therefore, this happiness, again, Shastram tells what? Is the very swarupam of the reality. The nature of the reality. The nature of the reality. And limitlessness is the very nature of reality. Fullness is the nature of reality. Therefore, reality has to be discovered in order to discover fullness. Therefore, the burning urge for discover reality, discover happiness, discover fullness, discover limitlessness, in terms of discovery of reality, is what? Mukshutva. Freedom this year for moksha. And one must understand, moksha has to be discovered, and that only in one, unless and until I discover moksha, there's no way of becoming free from bondage. Okay, freedom is to be discovered, not to be attained. One this comes, and there is a burning urge for discovering freedom, which is called mukshutvam. Therefore, it is said here, let us learn now. Mukshutvam kim? Mumukshutvam kim? Moksho me bhuyaditi cha. Moksho me bhuyaditi cha. Let me break it. Mokshaha. See, when I'm teaching, please listen to me and afterwards you can read the book. Okay? Mokshaha me bhuyaditi iti icha. Mokshaha, again sandhi. How visarga has become O? I'll teach you in Sanskrit class. Mokshaha me mahyam bhuyat. Bhuyat means what? Is a ling, isn't it? A potential mood. The moksha should happen for me. Iti tas icha, desire. So desire, entertaining the desire that I must have moksha. There must be moksha. Okay. This is what is mukshutvam. Now, next. I'm going next one. Yetat sadhana chatushtayam. Sadhana chatushtayam. Yetat sadhana chatushtayam. Okay. I already said yetat, no, this is a third person singular pronoun, yetad, dakarantaha, isn't it? Yetad shabdaha. But here, sadhanam means actually, means. Sadhanam also means a qualification which is a means for preparing the mind for jnanam. Therefore, sadhanam. And chatushtayam, if you take, chatushtayam means a set of four. a group of four, a set of four is called Chatushtayam. What is number four? Chatwari. Remember, Ekam, Dve, Trini, Chatwari, number four. Chatwari Palani. Chatwaraha Purushaha. Chatasraha Mahilaha. Is it Chatwari, Chatwaraha, Chatasraha? Number four. But here, Chatushtayam is a neuter noun, which means a set of four. Dvayam, set of two. Trayam, set of three. Chatushtayam, set of four. And here, no gender difference. You can say Mahila Chatushtayam, a group of four women. Purusha Chatushtayam, Putra Chatushtayam, a group of four sons. Now, a set of four qualifications. How will you say now? Sadhana Chatushtayam. So now he says, this is what is a set of fourfold qualifications. Is it clear? Yetat Sadhana Chatushtayam. Next. Tataha.
Tataha.
Tattva Vivekasya Adhikarino Bhavanti Tatas Tattva Vivekasya Adhikarino Bhavanti. Let me read slowly. Tatas Tattva Vivekasya Adhikarino Bhavanti. Tatastattva vivekasyadhikarino bhavanti. If you break it, tataha, tattva vivekasya adhikarinaha bhavanti. So the author says here, tataha, thereafter. Tataha means thereafter. Thereafter, whereafter? After having gained these fourfold qualifications, people become qualified. Adhikarinaha bhavanti. Bhavanti become. So, those who are endowed with these fourfold qualifications become eligible for the attainment of knowledge. Enjoying the benefit of knowledge, even become qualified for understanding the teaching, isn't it? So, adhikari, adhikaraha qualification. Adhikaraha asya asti is adhikari. Nakaranta pullinga shabdaha, adhikarin shabdaha. So, adhikari, adhikarinau, adhikarinaha. And adhikarinam, possessive plural. So, for those people who are, adhikarinaha, here is adhikarinaha is the word here, plural word, okay, nominative plural. Adhikarinaha bhavanti. So, people who become eligible or qualified, for attainment of knowledge, when tataha, after understanding these qualifications, after having attained these qualifications, after having become qualified, they become eligible for study of the scripture and attainment of knowledge. See, study anybody can do, isn't it? Unless you study, how will you know the even importance of qualifications? Therefore, exposure to the teaching is very important to understand the importance of qualifications. Even to have Purushartha Nischaya, you need exposure to the study of the Shastra. Okay. Tataha, say now.
Tataha.
Tattva Vivekasya Adhikarinaha Bhavanti. Okay. Now, having introduced the whole teaching, now the first question is presented. Tattva Vivekaha Kaha. Say now. Tattva Vivekaha Kaha. What is discriminative understanding? Now, what happened when the qualifications were mentioned? The first qualification was given as what? discriminative understanding of what is permanent and what is impermanent. That is nitya nitya vastu vivekaha. It was given before. Now it is asked, what is tattva vivekaha? No? What is that? Tattvam truth. Tattvasya vivekaha. The discriminative knowledge of the truth, reality, is tattva vivekaha. So what is that? Genuine question, isn't it? That is why I tell tattva bodha really teaches you everything very, very clearly. Because in the very beginning, the teacher said, isn't it? Tattva viveka prakaram vakshyamaha. Remember, this book is going to teach us the method of discerning the truth from what is not real. How to discern what is real. Because we mistake what is not real for reality. Mistake not what is not real to be real. Therefore, because we do not know what is real, now we have to discern the real. We need to have the discriminative understanding of what is real. So, therefore, the book teaches us what? The method of discriminative knowledge of the truth. So, now he is asking, what is discerning the truth? Tattva vivekaha kaha. Look at this now. Atma satyam. Tadanyat sarvam. Mithyeti. What is discriminative knowledge of the truth? What do you mean by saying discerning the truth? The answer is given. Atma satyam. Atma satyam. May be very clear. Earlier it was said, what is nitya nitya vastu vivekaha? There the word used was Brahma. Remember? Brahma ekam vastu Brahma nityam. Tad vyatiriktam sarvam anityam. Remember that now? We have learnt earlier. Now here, the author uses the word atma, which means already our teacher gives us the clue. This Atma, the words implied by the Atma and Satyam. What is implied by the words Atma and Satyam, Atma and Brahma must be one and the same. Atma Satyam, say? Atma Satyam. It means Atma alone is real. Tad Anyat. Tad Anyat means Anyat is other. Other than the Atma, Sarvam Mithya. Everything else other than Atma is Mithya. Atma Satyam, Tad Anyat Sarvam Mithya Iti Jnanam Tattva Vivekaha. You know, Iti? What is the discriminative knowledge of the truth or fact here? Atma alone is real. Other than Atma, everything else is mithya. This knowledge is what? Said to be tattva vivekaha. So, now the question comes to me. He's going to ask now, what is Atma then? I don't need to answer, okay? He is going to himself give. So, okay, let me before go it. No, Satyam and Mithya. We have to see these two words. Satyam and Mithya. So, knowledge of what is Satyam and what is Mithya is discriminative knowledge. So, Satyam is real. Mithya is as though real. Satyam is absolutely real. Mithya is empirically real or as though real. So what is as though real, what is seemingly real, what is apparently real is as good as non-existent. But what is absolutely real alone is there. So Satyam and Mithya, these two words. So what do we mean by saying absolutely real? Absolutely real is that which has no beginning. That which is always. Satyam is that. See, the word Satyam also is used to mean truthfulness in speech. That is different. Here Satyam means Sat. And Satyam means real. And that, what is real, if you ask? And Pujya Swamiji has explained very beautifully in 2nd chapter, 16th verse, when he explained what is Satyam, what is Mithya, what is Tuchyam. He explained, Nasato Vidyate Bhavo. I should not go there. Why? Because we should read this first to go there. Why you find it difficult to understand Bhagavad Gita? Because we do not have the basic understanding of Tattva Bodha. So Tattva Bodha you must study well, thoroughly. Only then we should enter into Bhagavad Gita also. The understanding of Bhagavad Gita will be like gulping rasagullas. Okay? Easier I am saying. Okay, what I am saying here, Satyam, please understand the definition here. What is real? Real is that which exists always. That which exists always. Eppodum iruppadu unmai. In Tamil we have beautiful word meipurul. Okay, that which is always is Satyam. Which means, always means it has no beginning. It has no end also. So beginningless, endless. So always means beginningless, endless. Beginningless, endless means what? It is timeless. And we say beginningless, endless, it's also not subject to change, changeless. So beginningless, endless, changeless, timeless. Therefore, eternal. Understand? Eternal. And not only that, because it has no beginning, okay, all this, the same method of unfoldment I used even to explain Nityaha in Bhagavad Gita. When you say beginningless, what does it mean? It has no cause. Anything which has a beginning should have a cause. The chain has a beginning and it has a cause called gold. Isn't it? The gold must have existed already as a cause out of which the chain comes into existence. The chain has a beginning. So effect has a beginning and for which there it must have a cause. Whereas here, real is that which is beginningless means it has no cause. Uncaused. Causeless. Which means effect alone can have a beginning, it can have a cause, and the effect becomes what? Has dependent existence. Effect is dependent on its cause for its existence. And here, this what is real is beginningless, therefore causeless, therefore it has independent existence. You see that now? So what is real now? Real is that which has no beginning and end, and which has independent existence of its own. Alone is Satyam. So what is here that which has no beginning, no end, change, which is subject to change, which has no cause, and which exists independently. So that which has independent existence is real. Isn't it? So Satyam, he'd say Atma. Atma alone is real. Now we are going to see what is Atma later on. The method of arriving at the Atma is going to be said later on. Now we have to understand here. Atma, the very word Atma means what? Apnoti sarvam iti Atma. Sarvam atti iti. There are so many definitions are there. That which reaches everywhere means what? That which pervades everything. So that which pervades everything means, why does it pervade? Why does, it's pervade? Because pervading is its nature. So being all pervasive is its nature. So real is that here, the beginningless, endless, changeless, independent reality is of the nature of all pervasiveness. Therefore, it is implied by the term Atma. And this reality, being all pervasive, it obtains as the innermost essence of every being. Okay, this beginningless, endless, changeless, independently existing reality, which is of the nature of all pervasiveness, obtaining as the innermost essence of every being, is implied by the term Atma. This Atma alone is real. Now we only have understood, we know the word Atma. What is that Atma? How to arrive at that Atma? Etc. The teacher is going to tell us later on. Now we understand, what is Tattva Vivekaha? Okay, what does it mean by saying discriminative understanding of the truth? Discriminative understanding of the truth means understanding the fact that what is real, what is not real. And here, what is real? Atma alone is real. And everything else other than that Atma is mithya. Mithya means what? Next question. A mithya does not mean unreal. Mithya is that which is as good as unreal. What mithya means? That which is as though, that which is seemingly there, apparently there, that which is as good as non-existent, not a non-existent. Mithya is not unreal. Why it is not unreal? Unreal is that which does not exist at all is unreal. That which does not exist at all is unreal. That is why we never translate the world as unreal. Traditional teachers never do that. Okay? It is as good as non-existent, but not non-existent. Isn't it? So what is mithya then? What is apparently relatively real? So that anything which enjoys existence, dependent existence, and which has a beginning. Mithya is that which has dependent existence, which has no independent existence of its own, which has a beginning, which has an end, in between beginning and end also which undergoes a change, and even while existing it is dependent on satyam for its existence, is called mithya. So mithya is that which has dependent existence, having the beginning and having an end, in between undergoing changes, is mithya. Which is not real, which is neither real nor unreal. Mithya is that which is neither real nor unreal. Why unreal is that which does not exist at all is unreal. That which always is there is real. But that which comes and goes, which has a beginning and end, which has dependent existence, is mithya. Okay? So example we can give. If we take a clay pot, no? Before, here, with reference to, don't say clay is satyam, okay? With reference to, underline the sentence, with reference to this pot made of clay, we say the clay is satyam. Clay is real. Because with reference to the pot, clay has no beginning. With reference to the pot, clay has no end. With reference to the pot, clay is independent. Clay does not depend upon the form, name and function called pot for its existence. Understand? And the clay does not undergo any change. With reference to pot, only with reference to pot. Whereas, if you ask the pot about the pot, now we say clay is real. With reference to pot, clay is real. But what about the pot? What is pot? Can you say pot is not there at all? Pot is not unreal because it is there. We experience the pot. It serves a purpose. Therefore, how can you say it doesn't exist at all? It is not unreal. pot is not real, pot is not unreal also. What is pot then? Pot is a form. Pot is a name indicating a form serving a given purpose. Pot is a name indicating a given form serving a given purpose. So pot is, and if you ask, if I remove the clay from the pot, and will there be a substance called pot? Pot is a non-substantial form, name and function. The substance, the reference to pot is the clay, which is real. The pot is a non-substantial form, name and function, which cannot be said to be unreal, non-existent, at the same time which is not real also, which is seemingly there. Okay? And which existence of which is dependent on the real called clay. Okay? What is real? Called clay. This is satyam and mithya. And between the clay and the pot, what is the distance? No distance. So mithya and satyam are inseparable. Okay? So inseparable. Satyam is as good as the cause, not the cause. Satyam is not the cause. Satyam is as good as the cause. Mithya is as good as the effect. And satyam is real, beginningless, endless, changeless, independent reality. Okay, which is of the nature of all pervasiveness, obtaining as the innermost essence of every being, therefore implied by the term Atma. Whereas mithya is everything other than Atma is mithya, means the entire universe, including time and space, all the objects, okay, the entire objective universe, including time and space, have what? We can say mithya. Everything else, tad anyat sarvam. Sarvam means what? Everything other than the Atma is mithya, means has a beginning, has an end, subject to change, has no independent existence, therefore it is not countable also. Not countable, isn't it? Because it has no substantiality of its own. This is what is mithya. Understand? And this understanding of what is Atma and everything else other than Atma is what? Anatma. Discriminative understanding of what is Atma, what is Anatma is, what is Satyam, what is Mithya is, we say what? Tattva Vivekaha. Okay. I think I'll stop now. Sit. Just time passed. Because today, the first, we have just started, so I have to repeat all those four qualifications. People who missed the previous class also could make it. Now we'll continue seriously from the next page. Now the homework for all of you is, every class increase the number of pages here. Okay. Until page number 104, homework. Now, see, I have explained, but still, now the question is, how to arrive at that Atma, what is real? The real is Atma alone is real. See, I have given you the definition of what is Satyam, what is Mithya. And here, example also was given. But what is real? Atma alone is real. But how can we arrive at that Atma? Unless we understand what Atma is, we cannot understand what is real. Isn't it? So, Satyam Mithya Vivekaha is Tattva Vivekaha. Now, say now, what is the discriminative understanding of the truth? Satyam Mithya Vivekaha is Tattva Vivekaha. Otherwise, Atma Anatma Vivekaha is Tattva Vivekaha. But how can we discern the Atma? What is Atma? Therefore, the next question is going to be Atma Kaha. isn't it? So we'll see next class. And if you see, now I really want you to memorize the text. Memorize the text and break the words, understand each and every word, understand the unfoldment. You must be able to explain this clearly. Is it clear?
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.